Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to a January 25th edition of the MSP Initiative, MSP Talk. It is wow. I don't know if you guys are just slow rolling the month or not, but got to the end of January, almost end of January, got like half a week left after this pretty quickly, which means that the year only has about 11 months left in it. What are you doing? Have you started yet? Are you still on vacation? We get some housekeeping out of the way, and then we'll get into the good stuff like we normally do. So here we go. Everything that we do here at MSP Initiative can be found at MSPinitiativeAltogether.com. If you don't know how to spell initiative, put it into Google. They'll give you a good spell check and put MSP in front of it. .com, you're good to go. So this session is being recorded just like every other session we've ever recorded since I think March of 2020. Is in podcasts, so you see it in the podcatchers and YouTube and video format, but they're all listed very nicely. We also now have on that site a tab for MSP Community Minds. We are doing two completely educational events, completely free to the MSP to join us. You do have to get there, but like there's no $3.99, $5.99, $9.99 registration fee to get there. We're doing one in Nashville, April 17th and 18th. We're doing one in Denver, Colorado, July 24th and 25th. So we really like this format. Workshops, like multi-hour workshops where you're walking away with actual tangible thing, not just a death by PowerPoint, and MSP panels. So like we're going to get MSPs who are in the trench like you and talk to you about things that they know. So we're going to be posting topics and speakers shortly. And that is all things MSP Community Minds. Then we get into like our fun time, the MSP community block parties, which we've done on several continents in conjunction with several events in the industry. So here are all the ones that we believe we're doing this year. I believe we're going Europe. I have US. I have Australia. We have multi continent this year again. So we're excuse me, looking forward to it. They're a labor of love. Totally for the MSP community. Don't hesitate to register ahead of time. It just speeds up your process down the line. Anyway, we have some offers from the community. These are just deals and hookups from, vendors in the industry that you may want to take advantage of. If not, no worries. Then we have, lastly, our industry calendar. Thanks to our friend Jen, who's behind the scenes. She has populated somewhere between 250 and 300 events across 2024 and put them all in one place for you to see. So if you don't know what's happening out in the world, you could be literally at an event every week of the year. I don't suggest it, but it is there. Feel free to do that. Use that for your homework. For some reason, we're missing something. You can actually let us know, and we can see if we can get that in there for the world to see. That is all of the housekeeping. Thank you for a little bit of time to go through that. Now we're done. Here we go. Our special guest speaker today is Larry from Schneider Electric. How you doing today, Larry?
I'm doing great, George. Thanks for having me.
Welcome to the show. So, Schneider Electric, right? I mean, we'll talk about them a second. Would love to learn a little bit about your journey through the industry, Larry. We always start with that if you've never been on the show before. Sometimes there's just cool ways that people get into technology land. And we like to learn about those. So how did you get into the tech industry?
So I first of all, I've been with APC American Power Conversion and now Schneider for 30 years. So a little unusual in the technology sector to have someone be with the same company. And I got into I got into APC in a unique way. I was actually getting my master's in materials engineering at Clemson University, and was it was a football game weekend. It was parents' weekend, and one of my friends' aunts worked at American Power Conversion. And in the South, when they go to football games, they get dressed up. But I grew up in Philadelphia, and when
Me
we go to
too.
football games, we take our shirts off. So this the aunt thought I was a little different because I was in a t-shirt and shorts, and I lived off campus, so I rode my bike on campus, and she felt a little sorry for me, but I'd actually ended up holding court with all the parents there. And she said, "Well, if you can do that," she's like, "I don't understand what you're studying, but you could work for our company." So I ended up getting a phone interview. I got flown up to Rhode Island, which was my first time ever being there. And next thing you know, I had a job, and 30 years later, I'm still here.
Wow. That's a pretty cool story. Well, love to talk to other people from the Philly area, you know, born and bred over here. And yes, our poor Eagles. I don't know if you were watching all that, all the press conference from yesterday, but that's what I was at on my schedule. I, you know, it's like, well, let's just listen to this and see what they got for me.
Yeah, I saw the comments afterwards. So I'm cautiously optimistic they'll figure it out.
Yeah. Vic Fangio. Welcome to Philadelphia, Vic. so that's a cool story. Love that. I mean, I don't know if you know, Brian Dawkins is a big Clemson guy. I think his, one of his kids went there too. So that's pretty cool. APC, right? I mean, for as long as I've been in technology land, I'm like, all right, backup power, man, right? Like, that's what you always think when you think APC. I'm sure you still do that. I mean, I'm sure there's more too, right? I would think that the whole Schneider Electric thing, people are like, I don't know, I just know APC. So whoever Schneider is, tell them what's up, you know? So, you know, tell us a little bit about what's happening, you know, at a 30,000 foot overview.
Yeah, so the APC brand is still there. Obviously, we're part of Schneider Electric today. The value that we provided 30 years, we still do. We're the insurance policy for all that IT that's being used by customers for them to go drive their experiences to their customer base. So we provide UPSs, we provide racks, we provide PDUs, all of the physical infrastructure that you would need to really enable that IT to work. And then we also have software and services that wrap around that to make sure you can get the maximum out of the life cycle for that equipment. When we were acquired by Schneider Electric, that actually opened the door for other aspects of the customer base. So we were branching off into the data center market, and we were able to leverage the relationship Schneider had in the data center market, and then also start expanding into other areas around electrification. There's some other strong brand names, like Square D is another brand name that's owned by Schneider Electric. So it just enabled us to kind of expand the conversation and bring more value to our customers.
That's cool. I mean, the MSP space, right? I mean, some stuff changes, some stuff stays the same. I know that's weird to say that for a technology-based industry where things are rapidly changing, but here's the reality, right? A lot of companies, a lot of managed services providers drank the cloud Kool-Aid, right? Like they said, all right, well, we got to need these servers out of the closet and we're going to take everything to Azure or Amazon, AWS, or maybe just private cloud in the data center somewhere, right? You know, like I think to that thought, right, a lot of people stopped concentrating on power in the closet because, or if they did, they, you know, what's left in the closet, the router, the firewall, the switches, that kind of stuff. I would hope most MSPs are not running their own, like, you know, they probably didn't build their own data center. They may be renting space in the data center. But a lot of the times when you do that, the data center is like, oh, yeah, we have redundant power. Don't worry. It's on us, right? So from a technology service provider perspective, what is today's challenge on this topic, right? Like, you know, are we still worried about workstations? Are we still worried about the closet? I mean, if you're in private cloud, do I trust the data center? Or am I putting something in myself?
Yeah, so it's interesting when the cloud was starting out, there was a lot of talk about just us going away. Like people thought our business was going to disappear, and that actually didn't happen. The first thing is, and you already mentioned it. You know, even though the compute was in the cloud, you still needed to connect to it. So that means whatever was left on premise still needed to be protected. So there was a very strong story for our products and our services and solutions to go there. What we've been seeing though is a couple of things. One, some of those early adopters that went into the cloud are now starting to come back out of the cloud and bring their stuff back on premise, which actually creates some unique challenges because some cases, the infrastructure is not there anymore because they moved on from it. But also the knowledge isn't there either because the people that actually used to do that are no longer with those organizations. So it's actually opening up a tremendous opportunity for MSPs and service providers to kind of fill that void. And I think you see that, you know, if you talk to partners or go look at their websites, you see a lot of messaging around virtual CIO or infrastructure as a service. And we really snap into that. Again, well, our value story is still there in regards to being the insurance policies. That's the first thing. The second thing that we're seeing, and this is starting to accelerate, but we're seeing more and more technology being brought outside the data center and closer to us as consumers. And you saw that acceleration really happen after COVID. You know, basically everything had an app. It was all about the digital experience. And that technology that needs to drive that is actually being brought, you know, into the what we call the edge, right? So the distributed edge. So that is actually creating tremendous opportunity for not only our hardware, but more specifically for managed service providers to go and manage that for them, for those customers, and actually create service plays or managed power play that they can then provide as a service to their customers.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, here's the thing, you know, there's a lot of use cases where, you know, like things that need to be managed are not manageable, right? You know, like things that are plugged in, the remote, like rebootability of those devices. How many times do we sell somebody? And I talk about this all the time. It's like, yeah, I love the MSPs who are like, oh, I'm going to pick a vendor where the end customer is just going to call the vendor directly. And then like, I don't even have to worry about it. And then, you know, we're good to go. And I'm like, yeah, until they get on the line with whoever that is, and they have somebody reading a script on their screen that says, "Hey, go unplug and replug your switches and your router to reset the network," and then they take the whole damn thing down, and then all of a sudden, now you're putting out the fire, and you got to roll the truck, right? That's the worst case scenario. That happens every single day. I'm sure of it. And and think about that. Could be home office, could be branch location, retail location, warehouse, whatever. You know, like these people are like, oh, it's like a vacuum. Just unplug it and plug it back in. Right. No. So that whole idea of the distributed edge where, you know, for people who aren't familiar with it, right, it's like, hey, the cloud, the idea, we got it. It was great. But some things don't work well if it's not close enough to where the actual thing is, you know, the user is, right? So now you're taking a subset of that technology and you're moving it out of the cloud, right, wherever that data center is, and closer to the end customer, right, whether it's a regional or actually on site, right? And I agree with you, Larry. You know, maybe this is a critical mass thing or just a straight up growth thing, but whenever I called Amazon, whenever I called one of the big, you know, kind of cloud compute guys, and I'm like, yeah, I just want to get a price, and they're like, yeah, this is the price. And I was like, so when does this discount? And they're like, let us know when your Netflix is sized. And I'm like, well, that's not going to happen. You know, like they don't, you know, like at some point there is a diminishing return where you have so much data that it doesn't pay to keep it in the cloud.
Right.
So I'm curious. And we've heard, like, you know, Michael Dell obviously probably has a little bit of bias there, but he's come out several years in a row and said, hey, it makes sense to now go backwards and either have a hybrid approach or take some of this back out so you can control it. Let's go to the data center side. Obviously, you know, the people who run data centers are probably talking to you at a larger scale. But like, if I'm renting space in a data center, I'm an MSP, I want to do private cloud where, you know, I'm renting rack, which comes with power and whatever. Like, should I be putting something in on this conversation, or should I just take the data center for face value?
So I think I would not take it at face value. I think it's always good for you to have visibility into the equipment that's supporting your business, and that's really where our software conversation comes in. So our software enables partners and their customers to have visibility to what the usage is. So in that scenario, I think I'd want to know exactly how much power I'm using to run my business, because that's how they're going to charge me and validate whatever they're sending to me in their bill. So that's where we can help a partner get that visibility through software. And then also through that software, get visibility to the stuff that's not being hosted in a colo that's actually on premise. And then basically use that to go drive that conversation back to their customers about how they're actually helping them to keep their business up and running.
Interesting. So are you, you know, I'm just going to go out there, is a, I would, go on the idea that a large amount of your product line, it can be centrally managed from one place now.
That's correct. Yep.
Okay. So like, what are we talking about? Like what level do we, are we talking about the type of equipment you would see at the bottom of a server rack, or are we talking all the way down to a desktop based device?
Yeah. So, at the 30,000 foot view, anything that's connected. So now I'm going to answer this in two different ways. So if you look at from a Schneider perspective, we have an architecture, which we call EcoStruxure, and that enables us to manage not just the data center UPSs and the cooling and the switch gear. It also gets into, you know, more the building, all the other aspects of, you know, basically from where the power comes into the building all the way down to the plug, we can do that. So we have different parts of our architecture that enable a customer to do that specific to what we do on our division is called Secure Power, which is the legacy APC. We actually can manage anything from that large data center all the way down to a small PDU or UPS that's at the edge. The only caveat is it does have to be connected to the network so that we can see it and pull that data back into our cloud-based solution, which then aggregates all that data and provides assessments and visibility as to what's going on with those assets, and enables, you know, a partner or a customer to then take an action on what to do next as we provide that visibility to them.
So we're talking about like connected via Ethernet cable.
Yeah, SNMP.
Okay. So if it's USB based, then probably not going to work, but something that has at least an Ethernet port in it.
So we do have some cloud direct connected devices on our smaller end. It's a technology we call Smart Connect that can also be brought in. Now that's specific to Schneider APC. But for the most part, the devices we're talking about are usually connected through SNMP.
Got it. one of the things that I've always historically, and I'm sure you've heard this before, but I'm going to put it out there anyway, like mileage varies on how far your battery goes, right? Like you're like, oh, this is good for 3 years. I don't have to worry about it. And then 8 months in, you're like, this battery's cooked. What's going on here? How do you get visibility into that? And like, and then of course you get into the, well, let me see if I can, you know, replace these batteries for cheap. And then, you know, all of a sudden you get a lot of knockoff stuff out there. So like creates like this, you know, like domino effect of bad things that turn into I'm probably just gonna have to replace this whole thing all over again. And then you got the end customer saying, well, I thought this thing was going to last more than a year. So like, how do you figure that part out?
Yeah, so that's where we get into the analytics of our EcoStruxure IT expert. That's our cloud-based monitoring software. So we basically pull all that data back into a data lake, and then we do analytics on it. And specific to the battery, we're actually able to see dynamically when that battery is going to fail. And that's actually based off of a couple of things. One, it's based off of just the overall life of the battery. It's based off of how many cycles that battery has gone through, and then just the overall health, or, you know, the charge, the ability of the battery to charge. And we actually look at that dynamically, and then we can actually tell the customer when it's going to fail based on what's going on in that environment. But the other thing, as far as the data that we have visibility to, and you kind of reference that, like, oh, a battery only lasts 8 months. Well, it probably is an environment that has very dirty power. So through our platform, we can actually show you what the power looks like and how often it's cycling, or if that UPS is having to go on battery a lot because the voltage is dropping around a certain. So they can actually start to kind of have some conversations if they need to with their utility around the electricity they're getting, or whatever it might be. But they'll have visibility into that. But the other thing is that now they can start to get a feel for when those batteries are gonna fail. So they can actually start to budget that, because I've talked to a number of customers that just replace their batteries every 3 years, no matter what, just because they want to make sure that they're fresh. Well, now that battery might actually last for 4 years or 5 years. Now we can actually give them that visibility. The budget they were allocating to go and buy new batteries, maybe they now can then allocate that towards something that drives more value for their business, maybe developing a new app that provides an experience to their customers that then, you know, gets them more market share. So our software will actually enable our customers to start kind of using data to drive business outcomes that are going to be beneficial to their businesses.
I love that. This is always it's like pin the tail on the donkey type thing. You have no idea where it's gonna go. To the point where like you just wait for the customer to call with the beep, right? And it's like, hey, this thing's beeping. How do we turn it off? You're like, uh-oh, here we go. You know, so that's always a fun phone call. You know, from a APC standpoint, you know, at least from memory, a lot of your stuff's just acquired through distribution, right? Like a Tech Data or somebody like that. How does the MSP, like, is there a definitive MSP IT service provider program with APC today? How does that work?
Yeah, so we do have a specific program. It's our Software and Digital Services certification program. And it is designed to actually walk a partner that wants to create a managed power offer through the process of one, actually identifying what's the right setup for them. So I've talked about our software, but we also have some supporting services that would address troubleshooting, and then also if need be day two support. So sending a body on site to go fix that. We have a number of different options that the partner can look at that they can then decide what makes sense for their business. And we have some partners that will leverage us to start as they build their book of business, or they'll actually just go out on their own and do it all from day one. But we've actually rationalized that whole process of deciding what makes sense, actually creating the offer for themselves, how to price it out, how to build the profitability model around it, how to market it, and where to snap it into their value chain. And that certification program helps them with that. As part of that program, we also have built in some profitability aspects. So we have a lifecycle rebate, which will then pay them potentially up to 20% back end on their software services spend. Trying to enable them to really to our investment back in them to help them to go and kind of grow that business. So that's available today. And then we are a two-tier distribution company. Everything goes through our distributors. We are working with the Ingrams and D&H and Tech Datas of the world to try and bring this to them and help them enable the partners that they support as part of the process.
Got it. So like, just to rewind for a second to make sure that I captured one part here. Managed power. So instead of just selling people stuff and waiting for that, for it to blow up and then just saying, hey, here's a quote to replace it, you're talking about a subscription-based service around, the entire conversation rather than just one-off sales.
That's correct. Yep. So and again, it's designed such that the partner can decide. Really, they can just resell our SKUs, or they could go all the way to, we have some partners exploring UPS as a service, where they're basically turning the whole thing into an annuity play, and actually not even having the customer take ownership of the UPS. They just manage the whole thing. So it's subscription based. It's pricing and the profitability is based off of kind of a monthly cost structure. And really it's designed to snap into, again, however they're bringing value to their customer. Because the thing that we've learned as we've talked to these partners is they come in all shapes and sizes. They all have different things that they want to do, or they do provide to their customers. And they also have limitations as to where they can invest. So we've tried to design this in such a way that it's as flexible as possible so they can participate on day one, but don't necessarily have to make the full investment until they're ready.
No, that's great. I mean, is that managed directly through APC? I know other manufacturers that started it direct and then somehow shifted it through distribution, and then it got a little bit hard to manage, right? Because like all of a sudden they were like, multi-year term requirements and stuff like that. It got a little bit clunky in certain cases.
So we have, just like any organization, we have some larger partners that have direct relationships with us. But we actually, our intent is this is going to go through distribution. We're working with like the Ingrams and the D&Hs of the world that have their platforms or their marketplaces. We're actually working with them right now to enable the supply chain of the management of those licenses to go through that. Our ability to scale and really bring this to market effectively is only going to be as successful as our leverage of our distribution partners.
Got it. Well, hey, you know, just painting the picture, right? You know, everybody's trying to figure it out. So that's interesting. I didn't even know that that was a thing. Now, when you do, let's say they start off the manage power program through APC, would your SKUs include the hardware, or is that just the software side?
So we have the software and services program is a subset of our IT solution provider programs, which would then cover more of the hardware side of it. So the way our full partner program is set up, it's again, this concept of flexibility. The partners can kind of pick and choose where their strengths are. And then we have different parts of our program that enable that. So we, as you could probably imagine, most of our partners are more on the hardware side today. And that's how they've grown up with us and have leveraged our partner program for years to enable them to provide our UPSs and other and racks and PDUs to their customers. We've just basically snapped on the software and services as a part of that. So it gives them another avenue they can go down to one, drive more value, but also bring more profitability into their business.
That's cool. How does the, you know, like, I assume with the partner program, there is a lane of support that they can actually reach someone if there's an issue rather than, you know, call the 800 number and hope that you get a hold of the right department.
Yeah, so we have, we've been going down this journey for the last 5 years. We've talked to a lot of partners to try and understand what we need to do to really make this effective for them. Because unlike the hardware side, there are some additional, you know, there's some handholding that needs to happen because this is really a service-based offer. So one of the things that we've done is actually, we've created a customer success team that will actually work with the customers or the partners on the back end around our software and services. So that's one support mechanism we put in place. The other thing that we have is we actually have digital service business development managers that would actually that are territory based that would work with the partners to help them bring that to address any issues, but then also help them with the process on the front end of creating whatever the offer might be that makes sense for their business.
That's cool. Do you guys, I mean, maybe, you know, I said now going back away, so bear with me. Is there some sort of like power warranty guarantee where it's like, hey, you know, we'll guarantee your equipment up to a certain dollar amount if our equipment fails or if you, you know, something like that. I remember something like that in the past, but it's been a minute.
Yeah, we still have that. So basically, you know, that's us standing behind our product, and it's more around like a surge protection. So if like a large surge came in and the UPS let it through, we do have that warranty where we would protect up to a certain dollar amount of the equipment. It's interesting. That'd be something that was, but it's back when I first started, that was something we talk about a lot, but it's a value we bring, but it's not a top of mind conversation. I think most people, you know, the industry just accepts that we're going to provide good product and we're going to stand behind it.
Yeah. I'll be honest. I mean, if something fails, it's usually the UPS when it comes to a surge, right? So like, you would be like, all right, well, I'll just replace the UPS. I don't recall anyone that I've ever worked with or worked around or talked to in IT land, I don't think they've ever actually taken advantage of that, you know, guarantee, to be honest.
Yeah, it has happened. I mean, think about it. I mean, the UPS is the insurance policy, right? So it is designed to fail. It's supposed to fail to make sure the IT equipment is okay. So it doesn't happen very often. I mean, you'd have to have a pretty monstrous surge for the UPS to get fried. I mean, and it's happened. But you know, that's what its job is to actually make sure that equipment is going to be safe.
Interesting. You know, like we always get dragged into this cybersecurity conversation, right? Like we said, cloud, right? That was like the big, you know, like every 4 or 5 years, a new marketing thing pops up. It's like, oh, cloud. Okay, cool. And then we went into like cybersecurity. Oh, okay. And then now we're in AI, right? So like, yeah, this is a whole new world. But when it comes to the holistic view, right? Like, you know, disaster recovery and you know, keeping the operation going. So it's a nice punch word, but like at the end of the day, people forget this part of it, right? Like, hey, how do you keep the lights running? How do you keep the servers running? How do you keep the infrastructure running in the event of an incident? We tend to forget that when we're writing our, you know, plans, right? Like they're always worried about, oh, this is what we do for security, and this is our backup plan, this, that, and the other, and then you forget about this part. And then, of course, people get stuck in the like the insurance of an MSP, right? The MSP either insuring themselves or the end user getting some sort of technology policy from their insurance carrier. And like, I feel like the last time I filled out a questionnaire for that, they didn't ask this question. They just say, do you have a DR plan? Yes or no? Okay. Like, it doesn't drill down deep into what does that mean? Have you had this discussion with people?
Yeah, so there's a couple different avenues when it comes to cybersecurity that we do cover as part of this. The first thing is the solution's cloud-based. So one of the things that we typically get in front of when we do talk to partners or their customers is we ask them if they have a security survey or protocol that we need to meet. And I've been involved in many engagements where the first thing we needed to do was actually fill out that survey, which in a lot of cases is enough. But in some cases, we've had to have some meetings with the security personnel at the partner or the customer with our security team just to make sure that everyone's comfortable that we're checking all the boxes in regards to our cloud-based offer. So that's one thing that we have a best practice around, and we do communicate when we talk to our partners. The other aspect of it that we talk about before I get to your question about disaster recovery and business continuity is we talked about these. In order to do this, the UPSs have to be connected. Well, because the UPSs are connected, we also need to make sure that we're the firmware of the UPS is up to date and is it has the highest level of security. And in some cases, there's some industries where you have to do that. There's compliance requirements. We actually, through our software, we actually have a device security assessment where we'll actually tell you the health of the devices from a security perspective. So we'll look at the firmware, we'll look at the password, make sure they changed it. And it might be crazy to think, but there's some people that just stay with the default password. We'll look at how they're sharing files. We'll also look at whether the device is actually capable of taking the latest version of firmware. So we'll aggregate all that up and put it into a report. In a lot of cases, when we initially start an engagement and we do this assessment, it's very eye-opening to you. And you kind of made the point, people don't even think about it on the power side. It's very eye-opening to the potential exposure or vulnerabilities that their network has just because of the UPS. So that's one thing we talk to them about. But then the other thing we talk to them about around disaster recovery and business continuity is that whole idea of the insurance policy, right? So if you're going to go and put together a plan that makes sure that business has alternative routes to stay up and running if something happens, you need to rationalize what you're going to do from a power and cooling perspective to make sure that whatever that disaster site is, because not, and you said earlier, not everything go into the cloud. There's going to be on-premise equipment to make sure that also has a solid day two support strategy from a power and cooling perspective.
Yeah. I mean, one thing that's definitely popped up is that the environment around this type of equipment does cause some wrinkles, right? Like if you're in a cold environment or if you're in a very dusty or dirty environment, think manufacturing, think warehousing, think construction, right? This definitely, it's not, I don't know. I know you got some configurators and probably some best practices, but like it definitely gives different mileage on how long the equipment lasts now.
Yeah, and I mean, as you start getting into those more industrial environments, we do have options that are designed to address. I mean, if you're on a plant floor and it's very dusty, we have racks that can address that. But even with that, I mean, the power is going to be fluctuating. Think about motors and stuff going. So that's where just having that visibility is important. And it could be that there's not really much you can do to extend the life of those devices, but at least you can have an idea of what that looks like and then kind of put together your support program that makes sense for that.
No, that makes sense. So when you like, I know a lot of people have gone mobile since COVID, right? Tablets and laptops and all that. Maybe they're not thinking about UPS equipment for that type of equipment, but like definitely desktops, definitely other type of, stuff. Like, are you seeing IT service providers sending home some sort of, equipment even at the home office level, or is that overkill?
I don't, so not, it's not pervasive. I mean, we do see it with like the internet providers. So like a Verizon or Cox, like, you know, with the modems that they're providing that provide the Wi-Fi, you're seeing them starting to incorporate a UPS and management of that UPS as part of it. From what I've seen to this point, it's been really kind of left to the choice of the user as to whether they're going to do something or not. But I wouldn't be surprised as you continue to move forward that you'll see more around that. This is not our core focus, but you know, if you do research on Schneider, one of these you'll see that we're getting into is what we call our prosumer division, which is actually focused on the home. So actually bringing intelligence into the home, all the way down to the panel, smart outlets, actually battery storage, if you have solar, all these things. And I could see that kind of fitting into that side of the business and becoming more and more prevalent as you see. And this actually gets into the theory as far as like the grid and how power is going to create, you know, the home at some point, homes at some point are going to be a power provider back to the utility to meet the demands that are out there as more people go to the home. So as you start to see that, I think you'll start to see it become more of a best practice. But I think today it's still kind of, there's nothing, it's not pervasive.
Okay, got it. I'm going to go a little bit off the rails here because you brought up a topic that I bring up kind of constantly with some of my colleagues who are the electric car fans, right? Tesla people out here. And I'm just like, hey guys, I keep on reading, like, there's not enough power available for like everybody to be driving an electric car to begin with. So like, how does that work? And they're like, oh no, they'll figure it out. And I'm like, electricity doesn't just come out of nowhere, right? Like it needs to be generated. Like, I don't care. Like we all know how, right? And then like, of course, I think it was like last week or the week before, they had all the news clips of like Tesla's dying in the parking lot waiting to get power in Chicago because it was so cold and people were like literally like their cars were dying before they could get to the charger, and then the charger wasn't working because it was so cold. And I'm like, I'm just struggling, right? Like last time I checked, my gas car turns on, I drive, it's cool, I don't care what the temperature is. This electric thing's got me worried. What do you think?
So, and actually this is something that it's not my division, so I'm not the expert on it, but I can talk at a high level as far as what Schneider's doing. It just is, this is one of the challenges that we're trying to solve. So I talked a little bit about the prosumer division. We also have a microgrids division that's actually looking at power generation, right? And then also tying back into alternative sources, so wind and solar and those type of inputs for power. So I don't, there's not a great answer for it today, but it is one of the problems that Schneider's trying to solve at a high level is to be able to answer where is the power going to come from, and it's really one of the things that we want to help go and be part of as that starts to build out. So it's not my specialty, but we do have divisions that are doing that today and trying to solve that problem.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. All I said, especially to my one colleague who's like, oh, I got a Tesla, and then my wife got a Tesla when her lease came up. And I'm like, could you at least go and get like a beater car that's gas and like leave it in the driveway just in case? Like, you don't know, man. Like, what happens if the power's out? You know, your cars are dead. What are you going to do?
I think that's where you're going to start to see, you know, battery storage solutions being ramped up. Alternative generators that are on site for the houses or buildings being used to provide power back into the grid. Obviously solar we talked about. So I think that you're going to kind of see those are going to be the solutions that are going to have to help us solve that problem.
Yeah. Should be interesting times. Like the next 5 years, I think will be really, you know, really key into where this all goes. Especially when you had, I think it was like two or three states already. They're like, oh, we're not going to allow any more gas car sales by 2035. And I'm like, you don't have enough power to run these cars, these buses. I don't know what you're going to do. Like, especially the people that work at like the power plants in the cities. And they're like, yeah, the whole city takes this power, you know, compute or this power, you know, requirement. And in order to get to the power requirement to just switch all of the municipal buses, vehicles, trucks to electric is like four times what the entire city is running on. And I'm like, that doesn't make sense. Okay, cool. Sorry, it's a little bit of a pet peeve of mine, but yeah, going off the rails.
No, it's. I think it's valid. I mean, it is this, you know, when you talk about EVs or just electrification in general, like it's not it, it's that's the thing that's not talked about. Well, how are we going to do it? Again, I think Schneider has some, we have some things in the works that will help to try and address that. And we will be a player in that space as it starts to build out.
That's cool. Solar is an interesting animal. And again, kind of rolling a little bit consumerish here on this conversation. We're like, I think California passed a law where it's like, you can't sell your house unless solar's installed. So yeah, like now it's a thing. I know businesses have started to really adopt this, right? Cause they have larger, you know, buildings with more land and then they can install this type of stuff. And again, I'm not, I know there's, I think solar probably works a little bit like, backup, gas and propane and, generators, like where, electric has to move between sources, but the equipment that the APC, from a business standpoint does is it can help keep things running when you're flipping in between these power sources, right? I feel like at some point when the power does switch sources, it's got to go down even for a few seconds, right?
Yeah. So our UPS that, that's exactly it, right? So we're going to be there. We're going to be able to maintain that power for, again, it depends on how it's sized, a couple of minutes to, a couple hours, again, depending on what size UPS and how many batteries they have on there. But it is that gap or there to be in the gap as you transition from your utility to whatever your alternative source might be, whether it be a generator or a battery storage unit or whatever it is, or an alternative energy source.
Yeah. One thing that's definitely, over the years, like, hey, sometimes when you keep on adding stuff, like let's say you went to apc.com, you clicked on the little configurator, you start putting in all the things you think you're going to plug in. It's like, oh, you need this model and this many battery packs. Cool. You buy it, put it in, and then you know what happens? Like creep over time, right? Like, oh, we just plug this in, no problem. And then like, and then all of a sudden you found out that the amount of time on backup power is way less than what you thought it was because like you overpacked this equipment. I assume the software that's you can use to manage this stuff can probably give you a heads up that you're now have too many things plugged in, no?
Yeah. So, and actually there's a couple of avenues. Yes. The software can do that. One of the things the software can do even before you do that is if you have an existing UPS in there, we can actually give you an actual reading as to how much load is being used and what capacity of that UPS is being used, which actually ties into another conversation we haven't got onto yet, which is around sustainability, and right sizing and driving cost out of support model. But more specifically to your point, we can actually see what's being plugged in. So you can see the load increasing on the UPS, but we also have UPSs where you can actually control the outlets and actually you can turn outlets off. So someone they can't plug anything in because there'd be no power coming into it. So there's a couple of different ways you could address that situation, leveraging the software.
Now, that's slick. I didn't even think about turning the power on the UPS off on the port. Cause I'm just thinking about what happens every time somebody goes into the network room, plugs in a power strip into that port, right? And all of a sudden, five things get plugged into that. And you're like, what happened here? Why is this? What? Like all of a sudden there is a power event and the thing didn't even stay on, right? It was like.
Yeah, there's that. We've also seen, not necessarily in the data center room, like those are pretty well secure, but if you have equipment outside the room, we've seen the janitor plug the vacuum in and take the system down. So we've seen all kinds of stuff with regards to that.
Yeah, that's fun times. I can imagine. It's like, oh, the whole thing went down. What happened? Oh, I plugged in the vacuum. I don't know. It was an open port. That's funny. So moving forward, if you're an IT services provider, you could be an established one that's been around for a long time, or maybe you're somebody new, right? I keep telling people, I think this year, next year, there's a lot of people still getting, laid off from big corporate America, unfortunately. And like those technology people are going to go get money somewhere and they're going to be consultants and they're going to create IT companies. And so I think there's going to be more net new logo MSP IT companies than there are people who are being merged or go out of business. That being said, where do you start, right? Like, I could just go to distribution and, put some SKUs in and buy and, that's a path. But like, if you were to give them advice on this conversation, do they go and look at the program? Do they look at, do they just hit apc.com and figure out, what the configurator says? Like, where is the starting point for that?
Yeah, so there's a couple of different avenues that could go down. So obviously, coming from the IT industry, I'm sure they know that there's different resources there. One I think you're going to see, and we're starting to see this ourselves. Actually, I think distribution is going to be a good source to actually help these smaller companies to, one, kind of identify like what do they want to do, like what kind of value do they want to create. But then also help provide them with the resources, the collateral, the financing to go down that path. We've talked to a couple of distributors, and they are definitely they're making the investment to be able to provide that kind of consultancy to the channel. So that's going to be one avenue specific to power. So if they know they want to do stuff around power, I mean, the easiest thing is just to reach out through our website. Or if they still have the contacts from who they worked with in our organization before they moved on, they could reach out to us directly, and or to those resources. They could get them to a point or to someone that could help them. And then lastly, they could just go on our website and go into our programs and learn that way. So there's a couple of different avenues that they could go through to get what they needed to put their shingle on the marketplace.
That's awesome. One more thing, I'm on the, kind of software that can manage this, these devices out there. Is that something the MSP can self-host on their stuff, or is that just cloud-based and they sign in on your system?
Yeah, so the way the architecture is designed today, it's there's a gateway that gets deployed out on the customer side of the firewall, and then that connects into the cloud, and they pull the data from there. We have one of the things that with this offer is it's an evolution and it's a collaboration. We've had partners that have asked if they could actually a couple of things. One, could they host the gateway in the cloud and not actually put it on premise? The other is actually to do what you said, like host it themselves. We are not at that point yet. And the key driver is that we need to have that connection back into our data lake, because that's really where the value comes from, is leveraging the data that we have and our expertise around that data to provide the actionable insights that the partners can use to go bring back to their customers.
No, that's fair. So it's a subscription-based cloud service, right? The
Absolutely.
controller part, they're gonna deploy locally and then connect it onto the cloud.
But
Got it.
we did design it. We have a partner interface that's multi-tenant. Actually, we're just at IT Nation. We created an integration into ConnectWise. So if their partners
Oh.
use ConnectWise, they can use that to manage our alarms into their ticketing system. So we're trying to develop tools and integrations that make it easier for these partners to spin up a managed power solution for their customers.
No, that's slick. I mean, I know a lot of people. I mean, I came out of the ConnectWise world as well. So I love the fact that, I mean, that's kind of the magic sauce of that whole conversation, right? Hey, you got to tie all these third parties into one place so that you can actually see everything without having to go into 80 portals, right?
Yeah, I mean, this is the reality. I mean, we're an insurance policy, and we're a market leader, and people use our stuff. But if you're looking at running a business, you're not going to invest resources to go take our APIs, create the code, and pull it into your ticketing system. It's just not going to happen. So we have to make it easier for these partners to do it, so that they're not wasting their cycles on getting it up and running. They're spending their resources going to drive the business.
No, that's great. I didn't even know that integration existed. I'm glad you brought it up, and at the end of this, that's great. Actually, for obviously everybody from ConnectWise land knows, if you just go to marketplace.connectwise, I'm literally typing as I'm talking, connectwise.com, and I guess I'm gonna go over here and put in, yep, I typed in APC and it comes up with Connected Smart UPS with APC Smart Connect. Bada bing, bada boom. Here it is. So that's cool. I have to dig into this a little bit. Looks like it ties into Automate as well. That's cool. I like that.
Yep.
Neat. I love new stuff. Well, Larry, I learned a lot about what's going on over there, right? I mean, some of the stuff that you've been, APC's been doing since you started working there, still around, but like there's an evolution to everything, right? And so, number one, centralization, multi-tenanted, and can be integrated into your system potentially. Awesome. Distribution, you know, or if you get to a certain size, this, you know, kind of, you know, IT technology kind of partner program directly with APC. Love this, you know, this centralization platform is SaaS based. You know, some people, some, you know, I'm sure you'll get some of those people be like, oh, I want to sit on my own. But like, I say most people don't want to do that. So I think you did the right thing, you know, at least from the get-go there. That's great. And I love the fact that, you know, there's cool new things that you can, you know, again, as technology, you ever watch the NFL commercials, like AWS will tell you this next level stat, that this is the percentage. Like, you've basically taken that on what you do, right? And applied more business intelligence, which, you know, instead of waiting for the phone call with the beat, you can get ahead of things, which, you know, that's the whole point of managed services, guys, right? Like, stop putting out fires and, you know, predict and project what you're going to do ahead of time. So thank you very much for jumping online. I assume that, you know, if they want to learn more, they can go to apc.com, or where do you want to send them if they want to learn more?
Yep. So go to apc.com, and then look for the partner program, this / partner program. And that's a good starting point. And then they have my name. I'd be more than happy to talk to anyone directly and help them get to where they need to. They can just look me up on LinkedIn. And then, you know, we look for the opportunity to partner with them.
Awesome. Larry, thanks for jumping on board today. Guys, this session was absolutely 100% recorded. We'll get that on to all the feeds probably a little bit later on today. But definitely at msbinitiative.com under sessions. That's where we park all of it for easy access. Reach out to Larry. If you didn't see the Larry spelling of his last name, HANN. So if you hit him on LinkedIn and you type in finding the right Larry, there he is. And Larry, appreciate you for jumping online. Hopefully we see you again before for IT Nation, but we'll definitely be there again.
Yeah, actually, I look forward to seeing you again too, George. Appreciate the time.
Thank you very much, guys. Have a great one.